to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. Welcome to This Miraculous Life on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Oliveri Olumba. I have my master's degree in positive psychology, which is basically the science of human thriving. And the past 2 years, I was voted the best life coach in Washington, D.C. And I started this podcast because I have a core belief that human life is one of the most astounding, amazing, and possibly miraculous things that ever could have happened. And what I want for all of us is to live each day tuned in with that reality. And so this podcast is meant to liberate us from the bullshit that gets in the way of that and allow us to tune in and experience each day as the miraculous life. So each episode, we will be hearing from a listener who is sharing with us through a letter something in their life that is probably making it challenging to tune in with the miraculousness of life, getting in the way of their enjoyment, or just a question that they have. Or a listener could even send a letter about something that's going well that they really want to build on or make sure doesn't slip away. So today, we are going to be hearing from a befuddled and disgruntled millennial, as they have signed off, about what they think may be experiencing a quarter-life crisis. So, shall we hear from our millennial? Are you ready, Alexia? Ready to hear. Awesome. So, here we go. Dear Sarah, is the quarter-life crisis a real thing? It sure feels like it. I'm 27 and stuck. More than stuck. I feel like everything I've done over the past 10 years has amounted to nothing, has not helped me get a foothold in the adult world at all, or helped my position in life and career, helped to position my life and career in a direction I am satisfied with. And it's not like I've just been bumming around. In high school, I was a straight A student and a scholar athlete. I got into the college of my choice where I studied English literature and graduated summa cum laude. I've always had a strong group of friends who have consistently been around me. But when I graduated from college is about the time that I realized success socially and academically did not equate with success in the real world. I graduated at the top of my class and still failed to get any kind of desirable job in my field. To say that I was a little defeated would be an understatement. I did not want to be a career academic, nor did I want to continue being a poor student. So, going for a master's in literature was not under consideration. Instead, I went with plan B. I hightailed it to Japan and got set up with a somewhat annoying job teaching kids English. After doing this for 3 years, I found that teaching is not for me. I will never be accepted into Japanese social circles, and the culture gap makes dating difficult, if not impossible. My 3 years teaching has earned me some savings to travel around comfortably for a few months and not much more. I returned home recently to rent a shared apartment and work in a boring administrative office position. I feel like most of my friends are leaps and bounds ahead of me in the world, financially, relationship-wise, etc. Some friends are getting married, buying houses, or even having children. I'm single, broke, and every day I consider resigning from my shit-ass office job. I have considered going back for grad school for software engineering, but I don't have the background or the budget, and I hate the feeling that all of my previous experience would be more or less useless in this new endeavor. When I graduated college and failed to get a job, I hit rock bottom. After 5 years of doing mostly unfulfilling work and no closer to discovering my passion, I am becoming financially independent or satisfied with my love life. Once again, I'm feeling like a capable failure. I'm going to read that part again. After 5 years of doing mostly unfulfilling work and no closer to discovering my passion, becoming financially independent or satisfied with my love life, once again, I'm feeling like a capable failure. Am I being too hard on myself? Am I wrong to look around at other people my age and feel jealous and inadequate? Am I being an entitled brat? All of the above? None of the above? I could use some insight first and foremost on how to shake this feeling of being a capable failure. And secondly, how to adopt a better perspective or method of measuring my success or lack thereof. Because my compare and compete mentality has me down in the dumps. And one last, maybe impossible question. What should I do with my professional life to become rich and happy? Kidding, kind of. Thanks, sincerely, disgruntled and befuddled millennial. Wow, so disgruntled and befuddled millennial is experiencing a little bit of a rough time. And I think we can all relate to a time in our life when we didn't quite get the outcome that we wanted after putting in a lot of hard work. Alexia, do you feel like you can relate? We have Alexia, our studio engineer here. I always like to check in with
hello.
Her. Hey, Alexia.
Yeah, definitely feeling a little bit of entitlement, something that I think we all kind of struggle with and try to suppress from time to time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's, Alexia, you're the best. This is why I love you. I love your honesty. Even just throwing the word entitlement in there, I think, is very honest. And it's not a word that we all like to embrace readily, but I think it's something we've all felt, you know? Like, I worked really hard on this thing, and I'm entitled to a good outcome. But I think something we can talk about today is whether or not that is the truth. So the main thing, I think the most important thing for me to address, befuddled and disgruntled millennial, is there is an overarching tone of your letter about feeling really disappointed and down in the dumps because A, things haven't turned out the way that you had planned, but B, because when you look at how you're doing compared to your friends and your peers, that makes you feel shitty. And that's the thing that I want to dive in head first on, because I believe that even if you were having a tough time, befuddled millennial, that it may not feel like a crisis. And that word that you used about, you said, I hit rock bottom. I believe that if you could shift away from what you yourself call this compare and compete mentality, that you would have still felt some frustration, but you wouldn't feel like you were hitting rock bottom. And when we don't feel like we're hitting rock bottom, our ability to shift, to move forward, to maneuver around the situation is so much better. But when we are judging ourselves harshly and saying to ourselves, you're a failure, another word that you use, that is so harsh, right? To call yourself a failure. When we are telling ourselves that we're a failure, where does that leave us? Right? That is not motivating. We might think it is. We might think that by putting ourselves down, by being harsh with ourselves, by being very strict with ourselves, we're going to motivate ourselves to get out of the situation. But it doesn't work that way. In fact, what the research suggests is that when we speak harshly to ourselves, when we put ourselves down for not performing as well as we would have liked at something, when we are mean to ourselves, when we call ourselves names, that actually paralyzes us and prevents us from moving forward as opposed to being what we may think is going to be a kick in the ass to get us moving. Actually, it's not a kick in the ass. It makes us feel like we're not sure how to move forward, A, but B, even if we are able to move forward using that strategy, it creates a constant negative monologue in the brain where we are constantly experiencing put downs, right? Or challenges, or second guessing ourselves. So it's not a pleasant state in which to live. And I don't recommend it as a method for motivating oneself. But here's what I do recommend. So let's dive in. Last episode, I responded to a letter from a basket case boyfriend who was dealing with a girlfriend who has a very stressful job. And one of the things that I recommended to basket case boyfriend is that he get clear on his own core values. In other words, those four or five words that represent what is most deeply essential to him personally for orienting his life around in order to feel that he's living his life in a meaningful and satisfying way. And I think that that same strategy is actually going to apply to our writer today who's dealing with this quarter life crisis. And here's why. Because the person writing in, this befuddled millennial, is asking, what is a different strategy that I can adopt? How am I supposed to assess my success without comparing and competing? Because this method, and befuddled millennial, I really credit you for this. You say, like, this method is not working for me. Please offer me something new. And I really want to hand it to you for that because you recognize that the method that you've been using is not helpful to you. So I want to offer a new method. And the first thing that I want to say is that the number one sentiment of the new method, you ask, what is a new method for measuring my success? And what I really want to say is, don't measure your success. I don't want life to be a big test, right? Like, that's not what this is. Anytime when we feel like we are growing, learning, getting closer to our own truth, that means that we are living right. That is a success, right? So, and that can be very difficult, if not impossible, to quote unquote measure. So one of the main premises of this approach that I'm about to teach you is that it's not about assessing to say, am I doing a good job at life or am I doing a bad job at life? It's instead about checking in to say, how do I feel about how I'm living, right? And if we don't feel good, then the answer isn't you suck, you're failing. The answer is, oh, I would actually like to do something differently so that I can feel better in myself. Do you see the difference, Alexia?
Yeah, I think that difference makes a lot of sense. Just shifting, like, what is your response to that discomfort, right?
Right. Exactly. So let's dive in and I'll get more into that distinction later. So here is the approach that I want to teach you guys. I want to teach you guys, how do you arrive at your core values? And then how do you tease apart the other quote unquote bullshit that might also be in there? And that for our befuddled millennial might be a part of the operating system that he or she is dealing with that is causing this harsh judgment of self and causing them to feel like they're having a quarter-life crisis. So here's the approach that I take with my life coaching clients to help them hone in on their core values. So the first step is to do what I call an evaluation of your current operating system. And your current operating system is simply a collection of all of the values that are part of your consciousness or even your subconsciousness presently. But your current operating system is meant to collect up and name all of the values that you are putting stock into presently, right? And that are influencing the way that you live your life currently in this present reality, whether to your benefit or to your detriment, whether they're influencing you a little or a lot, whether they're influencing you consciously or subconsciously. And so the way that I get at this is to ask a series of questions that are going to sort of slyly bring out all of the things that you are valuing. And for example, some of the questions that can help us to understand all of the underlying values that we may be operating around include, when have you felt successful in your life? Okay, so a question like this can tell us a lot about how you define success, right? What criteria you have taken in as your own, as your understanding of what success is. Another question is the opposite. When have you felt inferior? In other words, on what criteria do you deem that you actually are less than the people around you, right? What does that for you? Another question would be, when have you felt happiest? You know, so this one is more, it may even be more subconscious, the values that that brings out. But it's like in those moments when you actually feel really good and satisfied in your life, what is happening in those moments? And how can we capture and really find language to define what those values are? Okay, so that's just a snapshot of some of the questions that I ask to make this big long list of collecting what is our current operating system. In other words, all of the values that we are currently putting stock into that influence the way that we live our life and the way that we think about things today. And once we've collected that list, then the next step is for us to look at everything that's there and say, which of these values are the ones that I choose to orient myself around? Which of these values are the ones that I would say, yes, this is one of the most deeply important things that I would feel good about someone saying to me, wow, your whole life seems to be about this, right? Those are the ones that we want to, what I would do with my clients is assign those words a number one, right? And then on the other hand, we want to look through the list and say, which are the words in here, the values that actually, if someone were to say, wow, your whole life is about this, you'd be like, shit, that does not seem like a good thing, first of all. And second of all, I know that orienting myself around this value is doing me some kind of harm. And so that doesn't mean that particular value is just terrible and you can have none of it. But for example, values that show up on a lot of people's operating system that would usually fall into that category of, oh, actually, that's not what I want to orient my whole life around, and this is probably doing me some harm, are things like status, how I'm doing compared to others, attractiveness, likability, popularity, even things like financial wealth, even sometimes intelligence, because intelligence is often assessed in such a comparative way. Okay, so this is the process. The first phase is to understand all the values that are part of your current operating system. And it can be really hard to do this for yourself, which is why a lot of people come to life coaching. But some of the questions you can use to bring out those values are, when have you felt happiest? When have you felt successful? When have you felt inferior? Even, what are you self-conscious about? You know, what do you admire in others? The list goes on. The second phase is to then look at all the values you've collected and say, which of these values would I choose to orient my whole life around and say, yes, this is deeply what I am about, and a life oriented around this value would feel meaningful and satisfying to me, versus what are the values that have shown up on your current operating system that you would say, oh no, if this is what my whole life was about at the end of my life, that would be really sad or really disappointing or probably just kind of empty and unfulfilling, right? And those are the ones that you want to parse out and start to say, okay, these are probably what I would call my demons. And so this is the last phase of the exercise. The last phase of the exercise is based on that assessment of the current operating system, which ones do you vote heavily in favor of? Which ones are you like, actually, this is probably getting in my way to some extent. From there, you are going to use those two categories to distill down to what I would call your core values and your demons. And your core values are usually 4 to 6 words that represent those foundational values that for you as a unique individual are your formula for a meaningful and fulfilling life. Those are the 4 to 6 things that if someone were to say to you, wow, your whole life seems to be about this, you would be like, hell yeah, that is such a tremendous praise and compliment, right? And that would feel really good and satisfying to you. And then the demons, on the other hand, are the things that are part of what you're putting stock into now. So they're things that you do care about and that you are assessing yourself on and that are influencing your current way of living to some extent, but that you would say, actually, wow, these are not the things that I want to own. These are not the things that I want to choose to organize my life around. And I think actually, if I could withdraw some of my stock from those values, I would be better off. I would be better able to thrive. So I want to check in with Alexia because I've just given you a lot of information about this process of how do I understand my core values, but also how do I understand the values that are currently getting in my way, i.e. the demons. Alexia, any reactions? Is this making sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I think it's really powerful to have that like orientation point so that you can see when you're not feeling like yourself or you're not feeling like what you've committed to be the best version of yourself. But I'm just thinking now, like, wow, that would take a lot of contemplation, a lot of like introspective time 100%. In order to figure out what I want my operating system to be, you know?
Right. Absolutely. No, it does. And that's why I think most people don't know what their core values are, you know? And what I tell people is that that's a great point, Alexia. It does take a lot of contemplation. And you mentioned this word operating system. And I think, you know, what we're trying to do with this exercise is say, like, what is my current operating system, which includes typically the good stuff and the garbage, right? And then say, what is my quote unquote ideal operating system, which is usually exclusively the core values. But then what we also have to accept and know is that we're probably never going to get to our ideal operating system. You know, having the quote unquote demons not influence us at all, I don't know anybody who's gotten there. So that is a thing that we should be prepared for and not be frustrated with ourselves with, that just because we've identified this as a demon doesn't mean that it just disappears. But once we know our core values and know our demons, we know how we want to start to influence our own mode of operating. So let's take a quick break. Now that you guys have some food for thought, you can sort of mull over this three-phase process. The three phases are current operating system, all the values that are there. Secondly, assess what's there, what is most important, and what is potentially harmful. And then thirdly, use that assessment to hone in on core values as well as demons. Thank you. Welcome back to This Miraculous Life with me, Sarah Oliveri Olumba, and we have our amazing engineer, Alexia, here. She's always supporting me wonderfully.
Thank you.
So we are hearing today from a befuddled and disgruntled millennial who thinks that they may be experiencing a quarter-life crisis. And they're asking, you know, how do I get out of this compare and compete mentality? How do I get out of the dumps? And how do I get out of this crisis phase, right? And so what I've just laid out is my own original approach for understanding all of the values that are at play in your life currently, and then using that information to hone in on and define your personal core values, as well as what I call your personal demons. And so I'll give some examples. You know, so I've done this exercise myself, of course. Some of my personal core values are love, alignment with God, and a word that I call, you guys know the word, it's not a word that I call, I didn't make up this word. The word is reverence. Reverence is one of my most important values. I would say actually if I had to choose only one value, that would be it. And reverence means a profound, adoring, awed respect. So that's one of my core values. I believe that if I can live my life with a profound, adoring, awed respect for what it is to be alive, then that would be like my life's work would be done, right? So those are some examples of a core value. On the other hand, some of my demons are attractiveness. You know, how do I look? Do I look better than the next person? Do I look worse? You know, when I go out today, if I look good, then I'm going to feel a little bit better. If I don't look so good, then, you know, maybe I want to not participate as much, right? So that's a demon that I am shedding out of my life because I don't want how I look to have any bearing on what I do or how I feel, quite frankly. Another one of my demons is likability. So, you know, sometimes I get stressed about how people are responding to me, whether they like me or not. And really what I would rather is just being myself. And if I'm living in a way that is aligned with this reverence word, then who the fuck cares if people like me? Right? That's where I would like to get to. So some examples. And what I want to talk about now, because it definitely comes up in befuddled and disgruntled millennials letter. Let me look at a couple lines where that get at this to me. Our befuddled millennial says, am I being too hard on myself? Am I wrong to look around at other people my age and feel jealous and inadequate? So these lines let me know that you are doing some assessment on those demons, because jealousy and inadequacy are feelings that come about from the demons. You're never going to feel jealous and inadequate from your core values. If your core values are missing from your life, you may feel empty, right? You may feel unfulfilled. You may even feel guilty, right? But jealous and inadequate, those words for me are a red flag that the demons are at play here. And I want to introduce a psychological concept that relates with the demons. And the concept is called contingent self-esteem. Or I also talk about it as contingent self-worth. So there is a researcher, her name is Jennifer Crocker, and she studied contingent self-esteem. And she has this great research paper that I send to all of my clients. It's called The Costly Pursuit of Self-Esteem. And basically, this is my personal interpretation of the research, but basically, what this research finds is that contingent self-esteem is harmful, hence the name, The Costly Pursuit. And what contingent self-esteem is a form of self-esteem that, hence the name, is contingent upon meeting certain criteria. And so it means that we say to ourselves, I will feel esteemed, or I will be in tune with or accept my worth if I meet X criteria. And usually the demons that we identify through that first exercise are a direct representation of our contingencies of self-worth. Okay? So we all think of self-esteem as this thing that we're going to go out and build. But I think that what we need to start thinking of it as is something that we're going to turn inward and connect with it. Because guess what? The truth is that our value and our worth as human beings is not contingent. It is not based on anything that we have, do, or are. It exists simply because we exist, because life itself is tremendously valuable. And when we are able to connect with that truth, right, with that sense of worth and esteem, then what we have is a sense of worth and esteem that, instead of being volatile and attached to our successes and failures, is constant. Is this making sense, Alexia? Are you feeling me here?
I am along for the ride. Sarah, keep going.
Cool. Along for which ride, I wonder? I know that I myself have been along for the ride of the contingent self-esteem at times. And it's not a fun ride. and so I'm bringing this up because I think that our befuddled and disgruntled millennial is on that ride. And right now, that ride ain't going so hot, because the contingencies of self-worth on which our befuddled millennial is assessing him or herself, themselves, are not being satisfied right now. So if I had to guess at it based on this letter that you've sent, befuddled millennial, I would guess that some of your demons might include academic success, professional status, financial wealth, how I'm doing compared to others, status, maybe even stability. And I'm guessing at this because of some of the information that you revealed in your letter about when you hit rock bottom after not being able to find a job, some of the things that you laid out about how successful you felt when you were a student, and the jealousy and inadequacy that you're feeling now as you compare yourself to your peers. And here's what I want you to know, befuddled and disgruntled millennial. What I want you to know is that those things, your status, even your academic success, those things are irrelevant to your worth, right? And so if you can identify those things on which you have started to stake your worth and on which you tend to assess your worth and sort of relieve them from duty, that would be tremendously liberating. And I believe that that would free you up to instead tune in with your core values and start orienting towards those. And the core values have a totally different flavor than the demons and the contingencies of self-worth. The contingencies of self-worth, we are strongly driven to fulfill those quote-unquote values. I'm calling the demons and the contingencies of self-worth values because they are things that we put value in. We are driven to fulfill those in order to validate ourselves, in order to gain or prove our worth. But the truth is, we don't have to gain or prove our worth. It is a given, right? It is essentially a birthright that we all have fundamental value and worth. It's in like the Declaration of Independence or one of those things. And So the core values, on the other hand, are a totally separate thing. The core values, instead, we're not in pursuit of those. We're not driven towards those to validate ourselves or to prove our worth. We are driven towards those because they are the things that we inherently feel called towards, right? They are the things that we care about and feel motivated towards, not because they validate us, but because we believe that they are the right way, right? We believe that they are the truth. They are the thing that when we are orienting in that way, we feel like we're kind of vibrating on all cylinders. We feel aligned with goodness. We feel like there's nothing to feel guilty about. There's nothing missing. Those aligning with those things is what allows us to feel that we are living as our most pure self. That's the word that I was trying to get to, our most pure self. And so we're not driven towards those things to validate ourselves. We're driven towards those things simply because that's what feels good to live into. And when we're not living into them, it's not that we feel worthless, right? It's not that we feel invalid. It's just that we don't feel good. We feel out of alignment. So you see how the core values and the demons operate on a different wavelength? Alexia, does that make sense, how they're yielding both different outcomes but also motivated differently?
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. So this is the fundamental truth that I want you guys to come away with today, which is that your value, your worth is not contingent, especially you, befuddled and disgruntled millennial. Your value and your worth, you know what? I want you to thrive. I want you to feel comfortable in your life, but I don't care what your job is. You know, I don't care how much money you have. I don't care at what age, if ever, you get married. What I care about is that you're living in a way that feels honest and real and true to you. And if you can do that and then forget the criteria on which you've staked your worth, because that criteria is garbage. It's always going to be garbage, because the idea that your worth has criteria is false, right? It's untruth. If you can do that, then I know that you will be fulfilled. And the very last thing that I want to talk about today is this concept of entitlement, which Alexia brought up. And in your letter, you bring it up as well, befuddled and disgruntled millennial. You say, am I being an entitled brat? And I'm going to guess about that, because you put it in the letter, which I thought was honest and brave of you. But I gather from that sometimes maybe you feel a little bit like you're acting like an entitled brat. And I wouldn't have used that language. But since you did, you opened an opportunity. And, you know, my guess would be that some of that is coming up, befuddled millennial, because of the things you named early on in your letter, which are that you were such an excellent student. You put in all this hard work. You did all the right things. People liked you. You know, you were kind of above average, right? And perhaps part of your perception is that because as a student, you were above average, you deserve a certain level of professional or financial or even relational success. And the thing that I have to say, which don't take it personally, I say this to myself, befuddled millennial, the thing that I have to say about that is that we do not deserve shit. It doesn't matter who we are. It doesn't matter what we've done. It doesn't matter what sacrifices we've made. We can be the fucking Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa. And the truth that I have come to believe is that this life, the opportunity to be alive, is already far and away beyond what any of us have earned, right? Because none of us did something before birth to earn our life, as far as I know. I mean, I'm definitely open to the idea of reincarnation, but, you know, for the purpose of this analogy, none of us did anything before birth to earn this life, which is, again, the most incredible thing that we could ever possibly be given, right? A physical body, the ability to experience love and touch and joy and laughter and even sadness, connection, you know, like what in the world? Can you imagine like a toy that did? It's just unfathomable to me how generous of a gift being alive is. And so from that, I take away that because the gift of being alive is something completely unearned that was given to us as this like extra generous gift, it follows that whatever happens next in our life is already more than we deserved, right? So that is the last truth that I want to leave you all with today, which is that life is a profound and immeasurable blessing, or gift, or whatever you personally want to call it. But we didn't earn this shit. And so if we didn't earn this, then whatever happens in our life is extra. We can't be mad at what happens because all of it is already more than we deserve. And so the way that I sort of tune in with this in my own life is when I'm experiencing some stuff that feels like it's not fair or something doesn't go my way, rather than say, you know, why is this happening to me? This isn't fair. I really want to tune in with the gratitude of just being alive, A, and then B, asking myself, well, if this is a thing that could happen in any human life, then why is it not okay for it to happen in my life? Because I'm a human. And I do believe that the connection with experiencing life as a gift and understanding that everything that happens in our life is beyond what we deserve, then, you know, that does connect with this idea that our worth is not contingent. Because if we know that our value is inherent, then we don't have to compare ourselves to anybody else. And we also don't have to focus on gaining certain things that we think we deserve. We know that our worth is what it is simply because we arrived on this earth. And we know that the value of our life and the profound gift of that is what it is simply because we arrived on this earth. Thank you for tuning in today. Please tune in next Monday. And as always, if you want to send us your questions, your letters, your concerns, send me an email at sarah@thismiraculouslife.com. And remember, this life is beyond what we deserve, and your worth is not contingent on shit. Your worth is inherent.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.